Okay, I did 24th of April 2015. I'm here with Miss Shelley Gover in Nikola, Alaska. I'd like to ask her about her experience in dog mushing. Can I ask you some questions?
Yes.
Yeah, can you introduce yourself for a little bit?
My name is Shirley Petruska Gover, and the daughter of Nick and Olene Petruska, and I was born here in Nikolai. I've been raised here, and 5 years ago, I think I moved back. It's been a while.
Can you tell me about your dog mushing experience?
I started dog mushing when I think I was about 8 years old. Was back when there was no snow machines, hardly any snow machines around, and I wanted to go to different places and see different things and didn't want to walk, so that's how I got started mushing dogs.
So you raced for junior Aditarat when you were younger. Can you talk about what it was like for you?
I raced in the junior Aditarat when I was 17. We always had a lot of dog mushers from McGrath. There was about four or five mushers that ran the Iditarod during that time in the 80s. And so part of their training run, they used to come to Nikolai all the time. And my dad's house was always open to them. So, you know, like two or three times a week, sometimes we'll have like four or five mushers sleeping on our floor. And so one of them was Doug Scher. And he knew that I was really interested in running the junior Iditarod or the Iditarod. And so he was talking to my dad and asked my dad if I could work with him to run his dog team in the junior Iditarod race. I think it was in 1983 or 82. And they agreed on that. So that fall, I knew that I was going to be training for the junior Iditarod, and as soon as the snow fell, I think it was my first trip to McGrath was maybe in November, and I stayed down there for a week. And during that time, I was mushing his dogs, average about 20 miles a day, and it was a different experience mushing somebody else's team, but it was good. And the junior Iditarod itself, there was no snow during that time. I remember that was my hardest part because Kinnick, there were all the lakes and the trail was all ice. And so I never raced a big race before, so I was really nervous. I was coming from the interior. I was the only native musher. And so it was, was a big challenge for me being 17 and racing.
So can you tell me about the dog mushing and races in Nikolai?
Oh, yeah. There used to be, I think, about 13 dog teams that people used to have here. Just about every family that had kids had a dog team. You know, and there's a few people that just raised teams on their own. So we had a Nikolai Dog Mushers Association, and we used to meet over here in the library, I think at least once or twice a week, to decide where we're going to race and who's going to be the trail markers and who's going to be timing the race. And we had a whole, our officials were all set during the meetings. And it was a lot of fun. Like the whole street sometimes would be filled up with dog teams waiting to go to the start in a race. And sometimes if the race wasn't long enough, dog mushers coming back will be meeting the people that are just going out because, you know, there was an 8 mile race and 13 teams. Yeah, some of the teams were really fast.
Mm-hmm. How many races in a year?
We raced every weekend starting, I want to say, by Thanksgiving weekend, because we used to have a lot of snow and things used to freeze up pretty good by then. Yeah, then we raced every weekend for points. And I really don't remember how our points system was set up, but I know that just because you won a race during the weekend didn't mean that you were going to win the whole trophy at the end of the season.
So when did people stop using dog chimps for everyday life?
I think they stopped using dog chimps right around 1970, I would say, for every day. Because when I was a little girl, I remember my dad had a snow machine, and I remember the first snow machine races from McGrath up here. And it seemed like right after that, I don't remember people having dog teams. But as a little girl, I remember my dad had his dog team tied outside of his house, and different people using dogs for different things.
So why did people start to pick up dog mushing again for the races?
Why? I think it was just like a big fascination with the Iditarod coming through and seeing dogs in a race. And then we had a teacher that came out. Her name was Dawn Christie. And she started racing dogs. And then from there, like, I got really interested because I used to be her dog handler, and I started collecting my own dogs. And, you know, by then I was old enough to cut my own fish and stuff. So my family and helped me to get started. And then after that, it was just like, three other families got started, and we all decided we want to have races. So it started off like that. And then everybody that was watching the races wanted to have their own dog team. So it just grew really fast.
So when was the last race in Nikolai?
I don't remember the last race. It might have been the Nikolai to McGrath race, I think. Or maybe it was Hutinadnich, but I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I know I had to give up my dogs because I started raising my own family, and I couldn't afford to have a dog team.
So can you tell me about the Dawn Christie, the teacher?
She came to Nikolai, I think, in 1979. And she was really our first younger teacher here, besides the Jerry and Rebecca Reichland. She was a single, and she had I think four or five dogs. And she used to mush dogs, doing different things with them. Oh, I remember now. Can I go back a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
The first dog team to come back was not Dawn Christie. It was Tom Coyle and his family. They were teachers here, and they had, I'm not sure how many dogs, but they used to have really fast team. Yeah, I think that's where it actually started. But when Dawn came, that's when everybody started getting really into dog mushing.
So who was the founder of the Nikolai Dog Mushers Association?
Jeff Stokes. Yeah. He lived around here for a long time, many years. He had all of his kids went to Nikolai school before he moved away. And yeah, he had him and his wife were really active in dog mushing.
Can you tell me about the dog mushers in Nikolai?
The dog mushers in Nikolai?
Can you describe about them?
I think our dog mushers are just like unique because, you know, it's not like the Iditarod or the other like middle distance races. We all raced, our local races were, I think the longest one was 50 miles. And we all raced for points, and most of us were native. So it was interesting time to see different techniques, I guess. And so I was known for having one of the fastest teams in the village. And that was different because, you know, all my competitors were all guys and they're all male. So, you know, I had to try harder. And I always got lots of advice, and I think that was the biggest difference between, you know, outside and outside of Nikolai, in race, as far as racing.
What kind of advice did they give you?
Mostly they wanted me to win. And so they'd tell me things like what to feed my dogs and what I should do before a race, or you know, some mushers even tried to lend me their dog team because they know I tried so hard and they wanted me to win, and you know, never really worked that well. I still always got second place because the fastest dog musher during those points racing time was Jim Nikolai. Yeah.
Can you tell me about him, Jim Nikolai?
Yeah, he was kind of like real quiet. And he started his dog team, it just seems like with like four or five dogs. But when he started racing, he just beat everybody every time. And, you know, and he raced in the Mail Trail 202 for a few years. And it was a local mid-distance race. And he was just really one of the quietest competitors that I've ever seen. And, you know, he always knew exactly what to do with his dog team. And, you know, he never raised his voice in anything. He was always real quiet, and he never really liked to give advice, not to me, but he wanted me to win, so he used to tell me I could race his dog team once in a while, but you know, it's quiet like that. And his last race was the Mail Trail 202, and he won the very last race that year. And I had two of my best dogs in his team, and those my two dogs were the only ones standing when he crossed the finish line that year. It was a real big, and I had people from the Yukon were there. They wanted to buy my two dogs, but you know, I didn't really, wasn't really wanting to sell them.
Mm-hmm. Somebody told me that the fish wheel reminds him of a dog mushing days, and why do you think it's that?
The fish wheel? Because I think there was, during the dog mushing days, there might have been about two fish wheels in Nikolai. And everybody would be fishing and putting up fish for their dogs. And so, you know, I know that there used to be a community fish wheel across the river, right across from the village over here. And our fish wheel used to be up around the bend, or a couple of bends up. Yeah, and there's always was real busy during that time in August.
Yeah. What kind of fish are there in the river?
During August, or the salmon is usually done running by then, but the dog salmon's there, chum, and lots of whitefish, and sometimes there's pike, and sometimes there's sheafish, and but it's mostly dogfish and whitefish.
So the fish wheel that you got is for your family, uh-huh. And the ones close to the Nikolai is a community fish wheel.
Uh-huh. Sometimes when we caught too many fish, we'd just give the fish away too in our fish wheel, because back in those days there was lots of fish when the salmon was running. I think we were catching maybe 200 or 300 fish a day sometimes. That's the whole catch. That's including the whitefish, and the whitefish were so hard to cut.
How about these days?
There's been a stop the last few years on fishing, and I think the last time we had a fish wheel that was running in the village, nobody used it for dogs, but I think they had it so that the fish and game people were coming, and they were doing a fish count. So they'll take like the scales of the fish and find out how old it was, and you know, just for that purpose only. So most of the fish they let back go again, but a few of them they kept. And that's the last time we had a fish wheel that was working. You know, the village council built one a couple of years ago, but that one wasn't really didn't really run very long. It's still workable, but it's not going.
Can you tell me about that community fish view project 2 years ago? In more detail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on the village council then, and the village council had a grant writer person working on writing grants, and she put in for a grant to get the community involved in a project. And so her project was funded partly by, I think it was partly funded by Doyon, and then partly, I don't know where the other grant came from, but Nick Petruska, my dad, was hired as an instructor for teaching the kids how to build a fish wheel. And so the kids were only working part-time, and so that got, he got, was able to get more people involved. I think you were, I seen pictures of you working on it, and then Scott Gover, and I think Josh Nikolai, and David Petruska, or I think they were, all spent quite a bit of hours working with the kids on that project.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important to teach how to make a fish wheel?
Because in the last few years, we've been losing a lot of our elders. And I think if that wasn't passed along, then I think that that part of our culture will probably die away. And, you know, it's not, if it's not recorded, you know, if somebody is not taught.
Mm-hmm. Somebody told me that you know, there might be a time that people have to go back to the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear that kind of way of thinking from people around here?
I have heard from Philip Isai. He used to come and visit me all the time here, and he used to talk about his concern about how what he was trying to say was that our economy is not stable, and he's thinking that we'll probably have to go back to subsistence. And he was concerned that our people are not really prepared for that anymore, you know, because everybody is so used to going to the store and getting what they need, and they don't know how to go out into the woods and maybe listen and know what's around you. And I think that was biggest concern.
So is there anything that you want to add?
I don't think so. I think
about dog mushing?
Well, I really miss those days. You know, those were really good years for me, you know, and there was never a time when I was dog mushing that when I had my dog team, that I spent so much time in the village like I do now. You know, so I used to spend a lot of time on the trails, you know, going up towards Talida. My dad had a trap line up that way, and we used to go by, I forgot the name of that roadhouse that was up there. And you know, you could still see the markers on the trail from back, I think, in the 30s when our mail used to be run from Fairbanks. And it used to go all the way to Iditarod, and I'm not sure how far over that way it went, but...
Oh, by Dokmash.
Uh-huh. So our chief, the first chief that I could remember was Miskadifan, and he did write a book for the bilingual program, and he said that he was mushing dogs, and I think he said he was mushing 21 dogs hauling mail. So he, you know... Back in those days, used to think about those things, and I was mushing dogs up that way. And then I used to go towards Nixon. It was different, you know, even in our flat area here, just going 20 or 30 miles in any direction, the land is different. So I kind of miss that, you know. It's not something that you see when you're riding around on a snow machine, because, you know, ours is so loud, and with dog team, it's quiet. Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me about the elders, like Mr. Diafon and Philip Visay?
Mr. Diafon, he used to be the leader of the church, I think, and he always used to tell us stories all the time. You know, especially during Russian Orthodox Christmas, during the last day, we'd stop at his house, and he could talk in our language for hours. Sometimes we'd have to sit still and sit on the floor. Sometimes he'd talk for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours, just telling us what's going to happen and what's going to come after he's gone and stuff. I remember that. And that's what I remember the most about him. Yeah. And
what kind of things he predicted? What kind of things he said is going to be coming?
He said the end of the world is coming. And then he was talking about the things that were going to happen before then, and like earthquakes and stuff. I think that's what he was talking about, because I don't hear my language enough to remember, but I remember he used to say that there was going to be like different evil things dancing on everybody's roof, you know, and I'm thinking that it's probably he was talking about alcoholism, you know, and yeah.
How about the Philip Visay? What kind of elder was he using? What kind of things do you remember about him?
He was always concerned about the well-being of our village, you know, and in his own way, he wanted to pass on his knowledge, and I think he maybe struggled a little bit with how to do that, and you know, I think he had really good heart, and the things that he wanted to pass on, I think that he did a good job passing those things on to his grandkids. And I don't know, that the information that they have, they could pass along to their kids. And so, you know, I think he's really missed by a lot of people here. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for answering my questions.
You're welcome.